Maybe I'll shift a little this way. A move that it made in 2006 when we first discussed having these kinds of measures, and the executive committee voted unanimously to recognize and support the processes that evolved into COSA, into the Committee on Sustainability Assessment. And I'll tell you a little more about that. It's an independent group, a grouping of a number of organizations, of global organizations, nonprofit, and looking to do exactly what you see on the screen, to understand sustainability, but not from an academic perspective. From the idea that if we can't measure something, it's very difficult to manage it. So if we're going to manage, if we're going to accelerate and have real sustainability, not just a word, we need to understand what is working and what is not. So critical to have that. This is important not just, again, academically or from a process of a good idea, but from what the markets are clearly telling us. There are strong signals. You see here just a handful of the many companies that have expressed publicly a significant or total commitment to having their supply chains fully certified in the coming few years. And that's quite a challenge, given where we are today. We're nowhere close to that idea. And what does it mean, even, to be certified? So let me just give you a very quick historical perspective and a view even from some other sectors. In tea, two years ago, 10% of global trade was actually certified. What's interesting about that is that in 2007, it was less than 1%, rather substantial growth rate. The world's most important fruit economically, the banana, is certified approaching close to, we expect, close to a quarter by next year of the global trade in bananas. Coffee has had a very similar trajectory. In 2001, when we first did a measure in these areas, there was barely 1%. I think we had to round up to get to 1%. But look at what happened in 2005, in 2010, and the projection in 2015. And that projection is not a linear projection. It's based on the stated desire, intention of the eight or ten largest roasters in the world for what they're going to be having in their supply chains in 2015. It does not count the thousands of small participants. So how do we get to that 18%? And does that mean that we will have a more sustainable sector? Even more importantly, in a sense, is there a tipping point? If you look at large-scale evolutions in commodities, we often have shifts, and then all of a sudden it becomes the de facto standard of an industry. Is that where we're moving? And if so, what is that tipping point? It's an interesting statement because that will mean, in essence, a level of compliance, which equals a level of cost for producers globally, if that happens. So, what are the impacts? We think that we need to look at this at multiple levels. We need to understand, obviously, the impact on farmers first and foremost. First and foremost. It's the area that probably gets the least attention. We need to look at environment. We need to look at the communities that foster and that create the possibility of coffee and cocoa and all of the commodities. And of course, last but certainly not least, what are the impacts on the supply chain and on businesses? You'll notice I left out consumers. We'll assume they're in there. So our mission is fairly straightforward. We believe that we need clear and transparent measurement tools. We need to understand what's going on so that we can manage sustainability. And how we do that is by partnering with institutions at origin. There is no COSA without the leading institutions in each country of origin. So how we operate is by identifying an already leading institution in a country and build their capacity to a world-class level of impact assessment so that they themselves become the interlocutors, the actors, the drivers of sustainability in their country. They become the leaders, if you will. And I think that's important as our next step. Obviously, these discussions have their genesis in the North. And I think it's time that they really do begin to shift toward a more balanced perspective with origin, probably past time. So the committee works with diverse partners. You'll see a handful of them on the board. You'll note quite a few of them. The ICO is not up there, but of course is always a partner in many senses in terms of where we work. Coffee was our first area of work because coffee is the leader in all of the commodities moving towards sustainability. Coffee has done more and in more diverse ways than any other crop. So the idea is to look at these things in a balanced way, and this is not always easy because there is a strong push to look at the economic. It's natural, I think, to some extent. But we really do need to keep in mind that there are significant trade-offs, and they come in the social and in the environmental sphere. It's also becoming clear to most of us that work globally in commodities that we are no longer talking about limits, we are facing limits. We're facing shortages, not just of supply, but even of the basic resources, the water, the land, the biodiversity necessary for productive landscapes to thrive. So we're seeing this, and certainly a lot of the visionary companies and many of the visionary leaders, some of whom are certainly in this room, see the need to act now, not when it's too late, not when these things are already problematic for the producers that provide the materials for all of these industries. So just at a glance, you'll see that we look at a number of different questions, and we look at them in a consistent way across countries, across crops, so that for the first time, we actually have a common language. We get to speak the same about the same indicator gathered in the same way from country to country, and that's important for learning. It's like mathematics, right? If 2 and 2 is 4 in one place and 5 in another place, it's very difficult to have a mathematical conversation. So having the same language is critical, and you'll see that the kinds of things that are up there are very much business-oriented. You'll see issues of competitiveness, of risk, of resilience. These are part of the sustainability discussion. It's a broad discussion. It isn't about just one or two issues. There are many issues that have an interplay and that affect the outcomes for producers. We have 130 of these indicators, and I think the fun part is that you get to select your own metrics. It's like a game. You get to pick. We work with partners in selecting what it is they're looking for, what is of value to them, rather than imposing a particular vision of sustainability. I would bet, and I would do this with classes when I'm teaching, we go around the room and ask for people's definition of sustainability. Ask 10 people, 10 definitions. Who's right? Is it me? Is it you? Of course, no one is right. We're all right to a certain extent, and it's very contextual. So it's important that these tools be adaptable to the users so that they're somewhat standardized, but also you pick what's working for you, what's important. And this is what facilitates learning and sharing, of course, this modularity. So the idea is to gather together with partners who are interested in learning. And that could include any and all of you. We're quite wide open. Many of our partners are in the room. To capitalize on what is inherently a very complex set of issues. Any of you that work, the longer you work in this theme, the less you understand sustainability. At least the less I understand, the more years I'm doing this. So the complexity is critical, but working on it together and having these tools enables us to look toward a level of competitiveness, a level of success that is grounded, deeply grounded, in sustainability itself. So a couple of samples before I get off, just to give you a flavor of what we do. This is from some work that we did in Vietnam, and it looks at one output, one factor. That factor is training. Now, training really doesn't mean anything. It's just something you do. You need to have a result from that training for it to be effective. But it's interesting to see that the certification there, when you look at the different types of training, those farmers are clearly getting a lot more training than a control group, a conventional farmer. And by the way, we match always to control groups that are exactly like the farmers we're looking at. Same size, same agroecological zone, same capacity, same income levels. So we're looking at apples to apples, right? And you see this kind of difference, which is an interesting indicator, but certainly not enough, because If, for example, you see the huge difference in improving farm operations, a lot more training in that area, what should that give you? Ideally, that would give you higher yields. It would give you better quality coffee, right? And that's the other, another area that, of course, we have to look at. This sample, these get a little complex in this way, so I apologize, but you'll have them in paper form. This was with our partners in Colombia. You can see in red the control group, the conventional farmer and their level of defects. Gray is where the certified farmers started with. In other words, they started with sometimes farmers that were poorer, less capable. And look at what happened in the green by the second year. Those green bars at the bottom are the results of a certification process that in this case yielded for most of the certifications, and here you have Rainforest Organic, Fair Trade, Utz, Cafe Practices, Nespresso, and 4Cs. So you can see that for most of them, the difference is substantial. And this is the kind of impact or the kind of effect that we hope to see. You can see the yield when we look at them by specific certifications. But this is just for a handful of countries, seven countries. It means absolutely nothing. What you should take from it is this. Right? Not to compare one to the other, because they're very different in country to country, but to see that on average across the board, it's interesting to note, and this would have surprised me as well, because if you're starting from a highly intensive farming practice, this is not likely to happen. But since certifications are more often than not applied to farmers that are less intensive, you can see the kind of shift, 17% average across countries, for all of the initiatives together. So clearly a direction. Will this be the same way everywhere? Absolutely not. Another point as we move along the scale toward impact is net income. The bottom line for a farmer, regardless of everything else, is what is left in their pocket at the end of the year. It's great to have the environment be right. Yes, we need that. It's great to have good social systems and justice, if you will. But bottom line, if the economics don't work, nothing else works. So net income is a critical factor. And what you see here is two countries and five different standards, five different certifications. And what I wanted to point out to you here is the one on the end. It's interesting that in Guatemala, in green, they were by far the best result in terms of net income. Right next door in Nicaragua, the worst. Now, I don't say that to point out that they're doing something good or bad, but this is certainly a useful learning tool for that certification to get more effective in Nicaragua, wouldn't you say? It's more interesting to me because this is indicative, and I would share it with you in this spirit. It's indicative of what actually happens at Origin, is that it's very contextual. This, even the same certification will not have the same results in every situation. Of course, it can't. They're not that mechanized. It isn't a machine, right? It's humans, it's ecological factors, it's market factors, it's infrastructure that affect all of these outcomes. So I would remind you of that, that there is no one single answer or one winner, even. It depends on what you measure, and it depends where. So hence the reason for us partnering with local institutions to do the work locally to figure out what works for each country in its own context, right? And finally, I'll leave you with this last graph, which is another global representation of the means, the averages, from a number of countries on a handful of indicators. Zero is the control group of a conventional farmer. And it's interesting to note that while there's certainly great differences, that on average, and it's really important to get the average part, because there are places where the results are negative, where being certified is not beneficial to farmers, is not helping them, or one particular certification perhaps. But on average, we're clearly beginning to see the evolution of data, strong, solid, statistically sound data, to levels higher than 90% confidence and very low levels of error. We're seeing the kinds of results that are quite interesting. They seem to begin to paint a picture. So yields 17% higher than conventional, prices higher obviously, revenue, net income, even the correlation to children being in school, education, things like food security, interesting correlations are occurring. So what we're drawing from this is that certifications have the potential to be a very powerful development tool, one that we have never had, because it's a market-based mechanism. It's not charity necessarily. And that's really what we need in terms of development, are market-based mechanisms. So for all of their flaws, and I'll be the first to point out hundreds of them, we don't have anything better, and I think we really need to look at how do we invest in this tool, this mechanism, to make it better, to make it more effective, to serve producers, to serve supply chains, to serve communities, and of course to serve the environment in which we work. I'll leave you with just a couple of directional points about where I think this is going. And one of them is that I think the overarching theme is a necessary shift from not just a participation, I crossed that word out purposely, but a leadership, much more leadership on these issues from origin. Certainly the capacity is there. It needs to come from there. This needs to be a partnership of sustainability, not driven from one direction or another. We clearly need to lower the cost. The cost benefit, just looking at the economic side of the equation, is not always very positive. It's onerous for many producers to be certified. Right? They're not getting the level of income, especially in a high-priced market as it is now. They're not getting the differentials that make them want to stay engaged. In 2001, 2002, certifications were fabulous. The diffs were enormous, great. But that's certainly not the case now. We also need to get a little more innovative. Certification is useful, but as in point one, it is not the answer or the only answer. It is one great tool, but it's not the only one by any means. So what kinds of innovations can we pull out of this, particularly from the technology side? There are a lot of interesting approaches that are being taken now, interesting new developments that are being piloted in countries that can help us really reduce the costs and make these approaches even more effective globally. And finally, and very much in the work embedded in the work we do, is that we need a better understanding of what's happening. And in terms of that, having these global indicators. And so I invite you all to share, and we're happy, of course, to talk further about any of these topics, because we'd like this to be an open source sort of approach. We'd like it to be inclusive of everyone, so that we all can have a better understanding and therefore move sustainability in the direction that it needs to go. And also thank you, of course, to our, as they say on television, to our sponsors. So thank you very much, and I look forward to your questions and to talking with you more after the session. Thanks.